Welcome to the Global Citizen Life podcast. Today on the show, we have Carla. Now, Carla went from being a third culture kid to a thriving expat while taking her career abroad. She merged her passion for global adventures with education, with expertise in student affairs administration. Carla is a higher education professional and consultant and the founder of Rose Apple Global. Since childhood, Carla has lived, worked, and succeeded in 10 countries using her education and career to build a business. Carla has over 20 years experience in higher education, 10 has been international. Carla is a strategist at heart. Her years abroad had led her to make the global leap and assist academic organizations in creating their desired goals with pathways toward their desired outcomes. And Carla has been to over 50 countries, enjoying beach locations, visiting historical sites, reading, watching movies, being creative in the kitchen, listening to music, and having conversations about trending and current events. Well, welcome to the show, Carla.
Great, Sally. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And so you've lived in many countries. Let's start with which ones you've lived in.
So I always have to think about this progressively. So born in the U.S., lived in Jamaica, moved back to the U.S., left the U.S. for my first international position in the United Arab Emirates, then was a repat, so I repatriated for a short time to the U.S., and then left for Afghanistan, and then the Commonwealth of Dominica, Singapore. Took a career sabbatical and stayed between Indonesia and Malaysia, moved to Bangladesh, left Bangladesh, moved to Niger, West Africa, moved from Niger to the Dominican Republic. And from the Dominican Republic, I am back in the UAE, full circle move essentially.
Wow, that's interesting. And some of those destinations are not your typical destination that people would think about moving to unless they're being transferred for work purposes.
That is true. I do have an off the beaten path, career path, and country list.
It's great. That just brings a whole diversity of experiences and realizing, you know, in a lot of countries, a lot of things are done very similar to each other, but then there's things that are done very, very differently.
Wholeheartedly agree. And the things that resonate in, you know, if someone's observant, I've lived in four Islamic countries, for example. Mm-hmm. And even within those four Islamic countries, things are very different. And so that is part of global living.
Right. Right. And so you're in the UAE, back in the UAE now. How long are you in the same city that you were in before, or are you different city this time than the last time?
Different city than the last time. So last time I was here, I was in Al Ain, which is in Abu Dhabi Emirate. Mm-hmm. And now I am in Ras Al Khaimah city in Ras Al Khaimah Emirate.
Okay.
So I'm in the Northern Emirates, the ones that most people don't hear about or talk about.
Right, because
so
people...
I'm in one of those.
Yeah, because a lot of people, when they think of the UAE, they just think Dubai. It's because
exactly.
It's the most popular. But there's a lot more to the UAE than just Dubai.
Exactly. Yes, definitely. There's seven Emirates. I live in one of the northern ones. I have the beauty of the mountains and the mountain range that goes through the northern part of the UAE and borderlines Oman. And I have the beaches. So I have the best of both worlds and in the middle of the desert.
Nice. Nice. And so how did you choose that area or region? Or was it work related? Was it the choice that you wanted to go there? What were some of the factors that come into you relocating?
So I consider myself a career expat, and specifically a higher ed expat. I have used my career and expertise and experience in higher education, specifically being a higher education administrator, to move around the world. And so here in the UAE, here in RAQ, where I am, as everyone calls it, I'm back working at a university. But I've done other small stints outside of the university along the way.
Okay, great. And so was it something that, even though you're working, like you applied to be there, you made the decision to go, it was kind of on your, let's say, list of places where you were interested in relocating to, and the work helped get you there?
Yes. My stints abroad, or I keep saying stints, it's actually been 12 consecutive years now that since I last left the United States as home, I am considered what's called a self-initiated expat. And so I have initiated my moves abroad and the moves between countries, versus working for a company or an organization that has transferred me or offered me a transfer.
And that's a great way to go, because with a transfer, sometimes there's pressure and some people like to go or maybe not. And then the other part that, or kind of group of people that we hear a lot about, are the ones that are self-employed or have a business, but it's all remote. They can go anywhere. So they're not, even though they're working, they're not in that like kind of 9 to 5 having to go to work type situation. So they're free to travel and move places, where you're kind of in the middle of that, where you're using your skills to get jobs in countries that you want to go and live and be part of that community.
Yes, that is so true. That is why I consider myself a career expat and why I tend to work with career expats. For me, it's a great way, if you love your career, if you enjoy what you do, and you want to do it somewhere different, or you want to be in another location where that is a skill deficit, it's a great way to do that. It, you know, take that initiative, whether it's accounting, whether it's technology, whether it's education, and the list goes on. There are opportunities globally to be a career expat. You just have to find the one that fits you in the location that is best for you.
And that's great, because I think a lot of people feel like they're stuck. They either have to be the self-employed, where they don't have to go to an office and have a job that way, or they have to get transferred with work, that they don't realize that they can take that work, the skills, the job that they've been doing for the last 5, 10, 20 years, and still use that to apply for work in other countries.
And they sure can. What I do tell people is that it's a longer process. It's mm-hmm. not hopping out of the country you're in right away, as if you are a entrepreneur or a digital nomad. It's a process. It's the same kind of process you'd go if you're searching for a job in your home country. So you have to make sure you have your resume, your cover letter, your interviewing, and it's a mutual piece. So it takes a longer time. But in the end, I think there's lots of benefits that you can gain from it. And like I said, if you love your career, you want to do it somewhere else. But there are also benefits and perks that you don't have to automatically worry about, such as having health insurance. You know, you don't have to figure that out or navigate that. It comes with your job, just as if it would if you were at home.
Right. And the same thing too with being part of the community and making friends. It's easier because you're there, you're at that job, you have colleagues that mm-hmm. you already have things in common with because you're at the job. And it's easier where, for me, because I work remotely, great, I can travel anywhere, but meeting people and making friends is harder because I'm not in the same place all the time, or I meet people if there's co-working at coffee shops and things like that. And that has a bit that I find is more challenging to be making friends than people who are in a office type setting, job type setting, and they have colleagues already, and it's a lot easier to meet people that way and to then be part of the community a lot faster.
It is, because again, you have colleagues that you can say, you know what, I'm looking for this. I need a tailor. My kid just cracked his tooth. Can you recommend a dentist for me? So it does have some of those other pieces that go along with it, a quick community. And then beyond that, you can expand. You know, you have colleagues that, you know, in your work setting, whether, again, if you're an accountant, if you're in finance, if you're in shipping, people understand what you do and how you do it.
Exactly. And so for you, how is the process for getting a visa?
It, again, another perk of being a career expat and being employed, my company will take care of it, in this case, my university. And that happens in one of two ways. One, they will help you make sure you have all the visa information via the HR office or the immigration office. Two, sometimes they will pay for it all, and all you have to do is just provide them the information they need. They apply, they do everything that needed. Sometimes you have to pay part of it or all of it, but then they navigate you through the process to get it all done. So when you show up, sorry, when you leave your home country and board that plane and they say, do you have a visa for this country? The answer is yes. Here it is. They verify it. It's a one-way ticket. It's usually an entry visa. And so you have your entry visa and your one-way ticket. You board a plane. You land. You go through immigration. They stamp that. And then you finish whatever immigration process you have in the country. Depending on where you are, and where you go, you may have to then go to the immigration office to get fingerprinted and a picture ID to get your work pass or immigration pass or residency pass, depending on what it's called. In some places, the stamp in your passport is all you need because they recognize the entry letter that says you're an employee for such company, and they just put that in your visa and that's it. So the immigration part of it, lots of paperwork, and the company has to justify why they're employing you, but you don't have to worry about it.
Definitely is a lot easier.
Yes.
Like for sure, going that route. And you're right. What people really need to look into is the specific requirements for the country that they are going to. And if they're having a job, that's great. And to find out exactly what the employer will cover, what documents or paperwork they will take care of. And honestly, the more that they do, the easier it is.
Yes, it is.
Because every country is a lot of paperwork. There's just no way around it. It's just part of getting visa, citizenship, temporary residency, permanent, whatever route people are going through. It always is time consuming. I find it's never been as quick as it's stated. And I say it's stated because on lots of websites and things, it'll be like, oh, it'll be this amount of time or this amount of time. And I've had a few myself in different countries, and it's never stated time. So people have to have patience.
And sometimes even when what's listed is, you know, you're like, there's five things listed here, and you show up and you submit. They're like, well, we need, and then you're digging through your personal files to find the additional piece of paper that they're requesting, or, you know, going and get, because the photo you took, despite the fact that you know it met the regulations, in their mind it didn't, so you have to go and take another one. Or the fact that there's several countries that you go to, you need a medical exam to go and get your visa, especially if you're being a resident or you're getting a work permit. So it's going through their medical clinics, you're in line with lots of other people doing this, and it just takes a while.
Right. And it's funny that you bring up the document in the list, because when I got my residency in Spain, and I had my friend help me, and he was a lawyer, and we went to another town, because to get appointments was a lot easier and faster, because I was in Barcelona, and Barcelona was always like booked so far in advance. It's crazy. When we went there, and he's talking to the guy, and he's like, "Yeah, we have all the documents." He gave him all. The guy's like, "Oh, well, I also need, I can't remember what it was, another document, a registration that I was registered at the apartment or something." And he said, "No, that's not what is needed. Like, I went through the list on the website. We have all the documents on the website." He's like, "I'm a lawyer. Like, I know what I'm doing." And the guy looked at him, and he's like, "Well, I want it." And that was
It's
it.
that simple.
We had to go get it. And then I had to come back on, because of course that was a Friday, and it was, after lunch. So we had to rush back, go to this place, get, and it was a bit of a nightmare. I mean, we thankfully got it done, and then I had to go all the way back on Monday. And he was much nicer, in a much better mood on Monday morning than he was Friday afternoon. But because he wanted it, like, so
That's
sometimes
all that
that happens.
matters.
Yeah, you could have everything on that list, or, and then some places they don't even update the list. My friend was looking at getting a residency in Malta, and went to the government website, saw all the documents, and they made an appointment to talk to a lawyer, and through the conversation said, "But on the government website it lists these items, not whatever additional things." And she said, "Well, that's what they want now, and I guess they just didn't update their website." And so that can happen as well. So we
Yes.
always need to have patience and be aware that just because all the things are listed doesn't necessarily mean that's all the things they want.
Exactly. So true.
So
Yeah.
I do recommend to for people that are moving, like I was the type, I initially started, I'm like, I can do it myself. And I got so far, I got so much, but then in the end, I hired a lawyer. She was great, and she got everything done much quicker than me. Also, I find in some countries, how could I say this? There are certain time slots for appointments that lawyers have access to that the general public don't, I
Yes.
guess is how, because they just say, "Oh, you can go online. Anybody can go online and book." But I tried and tried and tried, couldn't get anything for a couple of months, I think it was. And when I hired a lawyer, I had an appointment in less than a week. So sometimes, you spend a little bit of money, hire a lawyer. It just takes care of frustration, documentation, and sometimes gets you into appointments faster. But if you have the work to do it
There.
for you, that's much easier.
See, that's what I was gonna say. I was gonna say our immigration office, or the HR office, depends on who does it. They take care of it. In many cases, if this is a university or a company that consecutively, consistently hire from international staff, they have relationships with the folks on at the immigration office. They know what's happening, especially when you're dealing with a second language, especially if it's a language that you don't speak. They have nuances and ways to have conversations and being friendly that will get you what you need. I have witnessed it more than once.
I absolutely, I'm sure, and I agree, and a lot of things are about relationships. It's about those relationships we build. So whether it's the lawyer, or the way that you went through work makes it a lot easier, because they have those relationships. They know who they're working with. Even I know one time too, what was it? I've got a place in Montenegro, and I was getting the needed to transfer over my utilities and things like that in my name, and it was just being a hassle. And so I got in contact with the company that I bought the property through, and I said, like, I just need help. And the girl's like, "Oh yeah, I know somebody. Don't worry, meet me here." She met me, got in right away, and got everything done in no time. And it's sometimes it, a lot of times it is who you know or who they know, and it's building those relationships, or getting to know people who know, and that comes back to having the colleagues at work. It's great to have that, because they know a good dentist, they know a place, to get whatever you need or the best deals on certain things.
Yes, they do. And
So what?
I've been grateful for that.
Yeah, I know when I was doing co-working in Barcelona and we would all have lunch together during the lunch hour, it would be, hey, how do I find this? Hey, does anybody know somebody for that? Or I used to be able to buy this. Is there something like that here? And that's the learning of a new country, you know, where to get things or what they have instead of, you know, because not
Right.
everything is going to be the same. So what have you found to be some of your challenges, whether it's specific country related or just in general with your moves abroad?
Challenges. I think one has sometimes it's been driving and navigating roads. So whether driving on the right or driving on the left, and I've done both.
So have I.
And then getting your driver's license converted is also one of those challenges, depending on where you are, can take a while. And it's one of those processes that don't be frustrated. Just slowly take it as it comes. Just navigate through it. So
Yeah,
that's
the
one.
driver's license is a challenging one. Definitely. Definitely.
I would say when I first moved abroad, I would say food sometimes can be challenging because you get used to what you're used to from home, your home country. And so I learned to adapt my palate, my taste. I find those substitutions, things of that nature. So that's not really a challenge for me anymore. I've learned to, okay, I'm here. I figure out what's here and I eat what's here that suits my taste. I think the challenge, I travel mostly single and solo. So sometimes dating's a
Okay.
challenge.
Yes, I know all about that.
So, you know, the transient nature of being an expat, and the community that we go through, and I don't think people really pay attention to that as much. I actually wrote an article about it because of my experiences. People, you're saying hello and goodbye constantly to people. And even though I'm at a university where I'm working with lots of colleagues, my colleagues could be locals, they could be expats, but there's some nature of being transient. With expats in particular. And so you have to learn how to manage emotions and connections and things of that nature in this kind of lifestyle and life. And so I've gotten better at it, but I don't necessarily say that I'll ever get 100% used to it.
No, I mean I've been an expat for over a decade and lived in different countries, and sometimes like part of it is me because I've lived in different countries, so I'm the one going, oh yes, I'm here for a while, but I don't know how long, and it could be 2, 3, 4, 5 years, I don't know. But I'm also on the other side too, where I meet people, really get along with them, and they're like, oh well, I'm here for 1 year, 2 years, I don't know, oh, I'm leaving in 6 months. And so sometimes even if you're the one to move and you stay, if you're in one of those kind of expat transient cities, you're going to be making and losing friends regularly, which sounds bad.
Yes.
And it kind of is, but especially like Barcelona. I can't even tell you how many people I've met in Barcelona. And out of that number, I'm not even sure how many are still there. Some are long term, and I still have a handful of friends that are still there, but I've met many that were there for a while, and obviously, and I was there during the pandemic, so that made a big difference too, because a lot of people left when the pandemic happened, so that was a big change. But even since then, so many people come and go, you know, they're there for 6 months, or they're there for 1 year to try it out, or they get a digital nomad visa, so that gives them 1 or 2 years, And then they're moving on to the next place, to the next place. And I get it because I love to travel and see places and I move a lot too. But making friends and good friends is, I think, one of the biggest challenges, especially as a single person. Because if you're there with your partner or your spouse and you have kids, you kind of get those, with your partner's spouse, you at least have that one person. And sometimes it's easier to meet people when you go out as a couple and you can meet other people. And when you have kids, then you have kind of those built-in people because the kids go to school. And so then you automatically meet other parents. So it is one of the bigger challenges of being single. But I always say to people too, there's advantages to it as well. I can pack my bag and go wherever I want, whenever I want, for as long as I want, because it's just me. I don't have to, you know, be considerate of somebody else or talk about, does the other person want to go to this other destination? Do they want to do these things? And so, like, selfishly, it's convenient and easy, but, you know, sometimes it'd be nice to have help with my suitcase and somebody go to the grocery store and buy groceries so I don't have to. And like a lot of those little things that people don't really think about. And I said to a friend one time, I said, what if I felt it like I'm in Montenegro and I'm only there a few months out of the year. And I thought, like, what if I fell down and broke my leg? Like if I fell down the stairs and I tripped and broke my leg. I know a few people there. I wouldn't say anybody's like a really good friend. I know I could call a couple people that, yeah, sure, they could go get me some groceries once. But then I think, what if I need to get to the hospital or like go to the grocery store regularly or just things where I have friends in Barcelona that I could call, friends back in home in Canada that absolutely. And so that's also something that we need to be a little bit more aware of because we never know when we're going to get sick or hurt. And who do we have that we can call or depend on to help us out if something happens?
So true. Yes, there are definitely, you've mentioned, I can't even repeat, but you've mentioned the ups and downs and the perks of on both sides that I've experienced. And, you know, I do think about those things. So yeah, it's like, you know, if I really got sick, do I have to go back home to the United States to have someone take care of me? Or do I, you know, do I figure out how to do this and navigate on my own or, you know, things of this nature? Yes.
Mm-hmm. And of course it depends on like the type of sickness and what is the healthcare like and all of those things, but those are important things to consider. I mean, anybody can get sick, anybody can get hurt, but generally as we get older, we are more likely to get sick or ill or things. And what is the country's healthcare system like? And for example, like Montenegro, I've not had to use their system, but I've heard from people, it's not great. And people will go to Serbia or somewhere else for things, but that's not an option. So healthcare is definitely consideration for people when moving.
Definitely. Wholeheartedly agree with that one.
And what about, have you had any, I mean, it's a bit different for you because you're going and you have employment with reputable companies while you're there. What about for banking? Do you always open up a local bank account in the countries that you're in? Or do you kind of use more of like the online bankings that like a Wise or something where you have all the currencies and you can use it pretty much anywhere?
Because I am employed in most places, I've opened a local bank account because it is more convenient to do all the local things that I do. In some cases, I'm paying, you know, my electricity bill like I do here. And so it's a lot simpler. In some places, I get paid in the local currency. So having a local bank to navigate the system makes it a lot easier. In some places I've had, I'm paid in USD. And so in one location, money was sent directly back home to the US, to my US bank. In one location, they would split my account. They would split my paycheck, where half of it was sent to my US account and half of it was sent to my local account. So it varies. I have traditionally had a local bank. Part of that is for me, I am local, to use that term. I want to be part of the being ensconced in the community. So having a local bank funding the local system that is here. Now, getting a bank account sometimes can be challenging, but doing those things locally, because I am in many ways in the community, part of the community here, for whatever the length of my time here as an employee at my organization, in this case institution. So I prefer to do some of those things.
Yeah, it's it definitely is helpful, and it's interesting how some people pay differently. Like I don't think I've ever heard of somebody getting half of their pay in their U.S. account in dollars and half locally. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I've actually worked at two places where they've done that.
Okay, I'm sure there's some benefits to that as well. So.
Yeah, and what's nice is I got to determine what percentage went where. So that was nice, because I still had responsibilities in the U.S. It was easy for that to be deposited and just use that in my U.S. account. And then my local responsibilities, use that in my local account. But I do maintain my banking presence at my home country of the U.S. And then typically once I leave a country, I will close my banks. My banking account. And in some places you have to, it's part of the process of exiting the country that you have to close out your account. So yeah.
Okay. That was actually going to be my next question. Do you close them or do you keep them open? But okay. And it makes sense because if they're not being used, then especially if they're local currency, if you're not really in the country, you're not living there, they're not being used and it's a local currency, there's not a lot of points of keeping it open, unless it is a really good type of currency and banks give good interest rates and things like that. But it's not too many countries where that happens.
No, there isn't. Not at all. Fortunately.
Yeah. But it's great that you're having at least more than one. You're maintaining your US account and then having a local one, because I always think that it's never good to keep all of our assets or all of our money or all of everything into one single bank account. We've noticed in recent years, the government will do some, call it shady things. I don't know where you were during the pandemic, but during the pandemic, there was a trucker protest in Canada. And it became pretty wide known between Canada and the U.S. And for protesting, Canada went and froze people's bank accounts for protesting. And they froze bank accounts to people that supported the protesters. So ever since then, I've been a major advocate of people need to have bank account in another country where they don't live. And so even for you, like you're not living full residing in the US, you may go back, you may not, but having an account there, if something happened elsewhere, and not even just the government, but just with identity theft. But if you're in a situation where there's identity theft and they've got into your bank account, to have another account where you can access funds until things get figured out, it's kind of like a backup plan or an insurance. To make sure we have access to funds just in case something happens.
Yes, I agree. And these are some of the things I talk to when I work with career expats, folks who want to move abroad and do what I do, whether it's in higher ed or in another field. I talk about what are the things you need to be thinking about. How do you make sure that you are stable? How do you have do you have a rainy day fund? What does that rainy day fund look like? Why you should have a rainy day fund?
Very important.
Yes. I say at minimum, your rainy day fund needs to have enough money for you to get a one-way ticket to whatever place you have residency or citizenship.
Right.
Yes, to go from one location to the other. So, you know, people are getting multiple citizenships or multiple residencies now. So that fund to get to another country may look differently for whatever locations there are. But yes. And as a U.S. citizen, yeah, the U.S. government will help me get home, but it's called a loan. And during the pandemic, that's what happens. It's, yes, you could take that emergency flight home, but you signed a promissory note to the U.S. government that you had to pay them back for the cost of that promise, that plane ticket home.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
They weren't just nice and friendly.
So I was in Bangladesh at the time, and there were 5 repatriation flights that left from Bangladesh back to the U.S. And those, the range of costs between those 5 flights were anywhere from 1,000, I think, 800 to 2,000 U.S. dollars, one way.
Right.
And you don't pay them right then. They have you fill out the paperwork, you sign a promissory mm-hmm. note, they will send you a bill, and you pay them when you get that bill. But right. They'll get you home.
Oh, yeah. They'll get you there. If you don't pay right away, you're probably paying interest on that.
Right. And if you don't pay it back, then because this is all through the State Department, the State Department is who arranges our emergency flights home. And who? Mm-hmm. What does the State Department do? They will then have a conversation with Border Control about your passport.
And then you're not going anywhere.
Exactly.
The thing that I had an interesting conversation one time with somebody, and he was in Mexico, and he was like, why would I get like residency or citizenship here? I can be here 6 months out of the year. And I said, but if something happens, he's like, yeah, but I've got a U.S. passport. And I said, I understand. I said, but the United States of America owns that passport. You don't. It does not belong to you. You are not entitled to it. And it's not me saying these things. It's the government. And it's the same with Canada. It's the same. They say you are not entitled to your passport. It's a privilege. And if they don't want to renew it, and the Canadian government even said it during the trucker protest, that they were calling the protesters all kinds of names and stuff, and said, well, you know what? Maybe we won't give them a passport, or we won't renew it. Because as far as they're concerned, they own it, not you. And if they don't want to give it to you or don't want to renew it, for whatever reason they see fit, they don't have to. And then you're either stuck in whatever country that you're in, hopefully it's a good one and you don't mind staying there, or they'll probably get you back to, because then you're a non-citizen anywhere in the world if they don't renew it, like you can't fly anywhere, or they'll fly you back to your home country and then you're stuck there. And that's not good. And that's why it's very important to have multiple citizenships and residencies, so you're not just stuck going back to one country.
Right.
Very important. True. Yeah. And so when you're helping clients, what other ways do you help them, or what are some key things that you say are really important for them to be aware of or to do, especially for first timers who are considering moving abroad, but like the security of the work and to go abroad with a job?
So I think I really start out with, let's talk about, what is your purpose for moving abroad? What is your foundation? What are you trying to gain out of this move? I know it's a career move, but what are you trying to gain? What is your purpose? And then I talk about things like, what's your values? What are your beliefs? What are your morals? Because that plays into geography.
Yes.
Then we taught geography, because if your values, morals, and beliefs are incongruent with a country that's on your list, and everyone has a list, then that is not a place for you.
Exactly.
And so no matter what you think, I can go there, it's not going to be a big deal. Yes, it's going to be a big deal, because you're not going to be happy in that country. And so we need to make sure we talk about your geography and the geopolitics that you'll be walking into. So that's another thing I talk about. I also tend to open up people's minds to geography. Have you thought about and we go through the list of places that they haven't thought about. Because in the, and then I also talk about, do you understand that you may have a list, but the opportunities are in another place? Now, you can eventually get to the country you may want to be in, but you may have to go through maybe two others before you get there, because the opportunities are in those other two countries, and then you navigate your way there.
Right. It's not always a direct path. Sometimes you need that additional experience in international fields, like in whatever your field is, but in an international situation.
Right, exactly. And then we talk about your credentials. So we talk about getting all that paperwork done. So we talk about your resume, your cover letter, your LinkedIn profile. We talk about what are some of the things you may be used to in your home country. And I work with a lot of more North Americans. So what are some of the things you may be used to that are not the same abroad? So someone may ask you about, are you married and do you have children in your interview? And your reaction is like, oh, wow, you can't ask me that. And yes, from your North American US lens, that is that's unethical to ask. From a lens of someone who's hiring you to bring you halfway around the world, they're not asking for discrimination purposes. They're asking because if they provide you housing as part of your perks, they want to know what size house they need to look for you and get you or to help you find. If you have children and one of your benefits is educational benefits, such as they may pay for part of your son's or daughter's education, they want to know how many children they you have, so they know how much they need to put in the budget to help pay for your kids' tuition. So understanding some of those nuances that are very different. Many places around the world ask for a photo as part of their application process. It's not necessarily about discrimination. Now, it can be. I'm not saying that it cannot be. And yes, it has happened, but that's typically not the purpose. People ask the age because sometimes in places there is a minimum age for certain jobs and there's a maximum age for certain jobs. But in, you know, that you may not be accustomed to that. So yes, some of it may be screening you in or screening you out, but it's not intentional and deliberate discrimination like we may be used to in places such as the US or Canada or some other places.
Absolutely. I remember many years ago, even I was just tutoring English online, and quite often I'd be asked, oh, are you married? And it did take me back. I'm like, what? What? Well, that's none of your business. What does that have to do with anything? And I realized that that was just part of the culture and just conversation and talking. It's a very common thing to be like, oh, are you married? Oh, do you have kids? Like, it's just a question about getting to know you as a person. And I'm so used to it now that it's no big deal. But I remember the first few times it did kind of take me back. But I was like, what? I'm like, what does that have to do with anything? What's it your business kind of thing from the, you know,
it's
North American
talk.
Mentality. Yeah. But to them, it was no big deal. It was like, what? It's just, it's a question like me saying, like, is your favorite color blue? Like, you know, right. It was no big deal. And so, yeah, there's a lot of differences, whether it's just conversation type, or like you said, if they're paying for certain benefits, they need to know those types of things. And if you're moving abroad, you have to be open and get used to things being done differently. I mean, if you don't want things to be different, don't move
stay
abroad.
Home.
You know, really, just, you know, don't. And it's really important to know too, as you said, like values and beliefs and lifestyles. I was recently in Dubai. I really enjoyed it. I have a friend there. She absolutely loved it. She moved there this year. And I know I get some people that'll be like, why would you go to Dubai? I would never. Like, they don't treat women well. And then I look at them and I said, have you ever been to Dubai? And they say no. And right. I said, then you know what? Then you don't know what you're talking about. You only know right. about what news and media and things are telling you. But if you've never actually been there, because I find many places are not like what the media portrays them to be.
Yes.
And so, but if But I was like, but what's wrong with that? If women want to stay home and be taken care of by their husband and not want to work and raise kids, which is a lot of work to raise kids, like it's not like you're doing nothing, like you're doing a lot. And do that. Like, don't judge of what somebody else wants to do. You want to go out and work and a father wants to stay at home, great. Go do that. Like
Right.
it really is, as you said, about knowing yourself, knowing your values, knowing what you want and what you like, and that will have you look at places that maybe you didn't think about and potentially close the doors of places perhaps you thought would have been. But again, when we move to another country, we're moving to their values, to their belief system, to their ways of doing things, not the ways that we want or that we're used to or we think it should be.
Right. And I think that's the big piece in working with people and helping folks understand, which is why my first conversation is not, let's see what jobs are available. My first conversation is, what's your purpose? What's your values? What's your beliefs? What's your morals? Because I really want you to hone in on yourself before you start doing your job search.
Right, because it doesn't matter where the job is if you're not going to like the country or the city.
Right. And if
There's
you don't like the people, you don't like the culture, your values don't match, why go there? I don't care if it's your top country, why go there?
right. Go for vacation. Go enjoy it for vacation and then leave.
Right. Exactly. Because living in a country and vacation in a country are two different things.
So different. Yes.
Living in a country is daily life.
That's right. It's very different. I say to
Vacationing
people, it's great.
is
Anywhere is
enjoyment.
great for a vacation. You can enjoy anywhere for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, however you go. It's great because it's all new. But it's not living, and it's very different. Great. So, Carla, if people wanted to get in touch with you, they want to work with you, they didn't really even think that, maybe this was an option that they didn't know about, and they're thinking, wow, I can take my skills and get a job. I don't have to start something new or a side hustle. How could people get in touch with you to work with you to help them find that destination with their skill sets that they have?
Sure. So I can be found on my website, which is The Career Expat. And so that's a great way to find all things career expat resources, free resources that you can pick up easily and find out how I go through my coaching programs with different people, what they are, what they entail. I gave you a sampling of like the first half of a coaching program. There's a second half where we actually do some real work. I am also on Instagram and LinkedIn are the two, Instagram and LinkedIn are the quickest places to find me. I'm pretty active on both of those spaces. On both of those spaces, I also share lots of articles about expat life and living. From my perspective, and for the higher ed folks, I share lots of perspective about international higher education, trends, perspectives, what's happened in my world of expat life as a higher ed expat and where I've lived and things of that nature. Being an administrator in different university systems. Because the system in the US and the system in Niger or Singapore, they're very different. So I talk about some of those things. So you can read free resources and reading. But yes, to work with me, the easiest way is to set up a strategy call. And let's start there to really kind of get us started and working through initial conversations, and then we can find out if we're a good fit for each other and want to work together.
That's perfect. And we will make sure that we have links in the show notes to make it easy for everybody to connect with you.
Awesome. I appreciate that.
Well, I just want to say, Carla, thank you very much for your time. I really enjoyed the conversation, and I know the listeners got a lot of valuable information.
Well, thank you, Sally. It was great to be here. I love parts of your story that resonated with parts of my story. It's always awesome to to have that experience. And I hope your audience takes away a wealth of knowledge from what I've shared.